Carla, you all set? Council will please come to order. Carla, before we take the roll, I've been asked to make a statement for the, actually, let's take the roll first, and then I'll make a statement.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick? Hales.
Okay, our screen is not functioning yet.
Yeah, they're...
So maybe...
Okay.
Good morning, everybody. Mayor Hales is traveling, so as the president of the council, I have the honor of presiding today. And I have been asked to read a statement about the rules of the House before we begin today. If you are here to testify in a matter, you only need state your name before you speak. We do not need your home address, your phone number, or other information. I believe that, in fact, sometimes in Salem they require that information, but all we need here today is your name. If you are a lobbyist, you are required by law to declare which lobbying entity you represent. You will have 3 minutes to speak unless otherwise stated, and at the end of that 3 minutes, you'll be asked to conclude your remarks. You may only testify to the matter at hand, and if you stray from the topic, you'll be asked to go back to the subject matter. To ensure that everyone in this chamber feels welcome, speakers and members of the audience are asked to be courteous and respectful at all times, and that particularly is true if someone is saying something that you disagree with, and we have to be able to give people the respect of the House if they come to speak to us. Council will not allow interruptions while someone is speaking. This is a basic right of people who come here to speak without interruption. And this includes clapping, booing or hissing, personal attacks of any kind, and throwing objects. Now, if you agree with the speaker, you may raise your hands. Disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. You will be given a warning, but ultimately, if the warning is not heeded, you'll be asked to leave. If you have a handout that you would like council to see, please hand it to the council clerk. It'll be made part of the record, and copies will be made for council so we can follow up. Thank you all for joining us today. We have a full schedule, and we look forward to hearing from you. Now, we do not have any pre-gavel matters, but we do have five people who signed up for testimony. Carla, would you please read the first council communication?
Item 112, request of Lauren Bloom Hanover to address council regarding profile theaters, Inside Out School, and community tour.
Good morning and welcome.
Director of Education and Community Engagement at Profile Theater. And I'm here this morning to tell you a little bit about the company and about one of our education programs, the Inside Out Community in School Tour. Profile is a unique theater. It's one of only two theaters in the country where our mission is to feature the work of a single playwright each season. We just began our 17th season, and we're featuring this year the work of the playwright Sam Shepard. We recently moved from the Theater Building in Southeast Portland into residency at the Artist Repertory Theater Building here downtown. Our Inside Out tour was conceived to address the challenges of giving Portland students access to live professional theater. In this new educational climate of budget cuts and rigorous standardized testing, we realize it's often impossible for schools to be able to afford to put students on a bus and send them to the theater, both in terms of time and in terms of money. But we also believe that all students should have access to professional live theater as a regular part of their educational experience. So we created this program where we take one of our main stage productions, we pare down the technical requirements, and send the original cast, costumes, props, and sound out to our local public schools free of charge to the districts or to the students. Thus, we alleviate the financial and much of the logistical burden that makes access to professional theater prohibitive for many of our schools. We piloted this program last spring, and we inaugurated it officially this past fall with our production of My Children, My Africa by Atoll Fugard, our 16th season playwright. The tour visited six schools, five high schools, one middle school. Four of those schools were in the Portland Public School District, and two were independent districts that serve Portland zip codes. This fall, we'll be touring a selection of short one-acts by Sam Shepard, and we aim to visit 11 schools, almost doubling our reach. We also hope to begin to build partnerships with more remote and rural communities who, due to their location and or their average socioeconomic status of their citizens, lack access to professional performing arts. The tour has been funded through grants and through private donations, and we intend to continue to expand the program in the coming years, and we'll be continuing to seek funds to do so. At Profile, we believe theater has the capacity to facilitate transformational experiences for individuals and communities who have the opportunity to engage with it. Through this program, we hope to provide that access and engagement to as many Oregonians as possible who may not otherwise have it. If you're interested in finding out more about it, you can check out our website at profiletheater.org, theater, T-R-E. And I am Lauren at Profile Theater if you're interested in contacting me. Thank you for your attention and time.
Can I ask you just one question?
Of course.
Do you receive any funding from either the Oregon Cultural Trust or from the Regional Arts and Culture Council?
I believe we receive funding from both. I can't remember exactly for this program. I believe we receive money from RAC for this program specifically, but the organization on the whole receives funds from both.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Be funded partly by the arts tax paid by Portland taxpayers.
Thank you
for coming to tell us how folks' taxes are being used.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. If you could read the next item.
Item 113, request of Matt Clark to address council regarding funding for green infrastructure.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Matt Clark. I'm the executive director of Johnson Creek Watershed Council, and I appreciate the chance to be here today, so thank you. I'm here today to first share a successful rain garden project, which was funded through the city's Community Watershed Stewardship Program, and which was completed last October by four partners, the Watershed Council, St. Mary Ethiopian Orthodox Church, DPAVE, and Green Lens. My second purpose, I would like using the rain garden project as a backdrop to encourage the city to expand and build upon the green infrastructure projects and programs that is, excuse me, it has established over the past two decades. So the photos. The photos you see were taken at the St. Mary Church, which is at Southeast 92nd and the Favelle, next to Johnson Creek. For the project, every winter when it rained, stormwater from the parking lot would flood the church. An untreated overflow from the pipe went in, dumps right into Johnson Creek. So together, our four organizations removed 2,500 square feet of asphalt from the parking lot and built a rain garden with 500 native plants. The project illustrates several key points about green infrastructure. The first summary point is that it's a cost-effective way to achieve multiple social and environmental objectives. It improves community livability. A church isn't being flooded every winter. It improves water quality. Less unfiltered stormwater is entering Johnson Creek. And I would note that this project is right near where a coho carcass was found a couple years ago in Johnson Creek. Green infrastructure engages community groups, nonprofits, and neighborhoods, and hence it leverages ratepayer investment. 50 volunteers contributed an estimated 340 hours to the St. Mary Project. And in addition, our four organizations contributed matching funds and in-kind services. All told, the city's $10,000 investment was matched more than 2-1. Green infrastructure can and should and does help the city address and realize real returns on its equity objectives by directly engaging underserved communities in developing and implementing projects. And last but not least, it brings people together. Look at these smiling faces. So I'm going to turn it over now to my friend Tadella, who is a member of the St. Mary Church. Last thing I'll say is we want to invite you on May 10th to a community celebration of this project. So Tadella can talk a little bit more about that.
That's May 10th?
May 10th.
May 10th, and I'll follow up by email with details.
Thank you. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Tadella Galagay. I'm chairman of the board at St. Mary Ethiopian Orthodox Church. This is the second time that I testified. So today I'm here. How delighted we are, how we are benefited by this fund. So as my friend Matt explained, that we have had a long-standing flooding problem since we owned the church back in 2002. For 8 years, we have been putting sandbags and pumping water towards 92nd Street because overflowed. Because of this project, we are able to remove 25 square foot of asphalt and made a green environment. Basically speaking, this year, our community, as you know, is the most disadvantaged community, a small immigrant community, with limited resources. We are able to achieve this goal with the help of partners, these grants. So I'm here today, thank you for the fund and how important, it's a significant improvement to our community. At the same time, the first time in 8 years that we're not pumping water to the street or we're not putting sandbags. So last but not the least, we continue to work with this partner. We have a great partner, DPAVE, the Johnson Creek Watershed Council, and Greenland. So these three partners help us not only just by giving us volunteers, but also the technical experts. So we are very happy that being partnered with the community, and the last but not the least, we are inviting the city commissioner on May 10, open house in the church. So I think Matt will continue to send an email. This is just thanks so much for giving us the fund. Thank you.
Well, thank you both for coming, and I should tell you that this week we all were required to file our requested budgets with the budget office. They're now all online. Thanks in part to the advocacy from community members like you, this program is recommended for continued funding, but we would urge you to continue to raise your voice through the budget process, because the more we hear from folks that are explaining the clear benefits to our community and to ratepayers, the stronger the case to keep this in the program. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Carla, would you please read Council Number 115?
Request of Wade Varner to address Council regarding help for the homeless.
Mr. Varner, welcome to Council. And
thank you.
You have 3 minutes, sir.
My name is Wade Varner. I'm the Executive Director and Founding Director of Homeless Against Homelessness in America, or HAHA, as we're known to our friends. I'm here to talk to you about, number one, the sweeps that are going on, and number two, HAHA sent everybody last week a file to show some of the police stuff that's been going on in the sweeps and stuff, and how discourteous they are to people out there. And I keep telling the police, if you have a place where I can take these people, please let me take them there. But they tell, and you get the yada, yada, yada. There is no place for the homeless to go in this city if they have a dog or any kind of animal other than the emergency shelter that's open right now. There's no place for the smelly ones, that people like to call them, the ones that aren't allowed into the missions and stuff because they're a little out of control. If people just sat down and talked to them, it costs $605 a month to keep somebody in permanent supportive housing. It costs up to $2,900 a month to keep them on the streets. Plus, we've already had one death this year from exposure. I mean, how many more people are going to have to die before we're allowed to set up a permanent camp? The whole thing about paying the landlord that refused to put the camp up under the bridge, $150,000. I'm saying turn one of the two spots on 6th Avenue there over to whoever. I don't care who you do it with. Turn it over so enough people can sleep there. Use that $150,000 to find a permanent house, because Dignity Village is going to have to move and everything else. We can become a leader, which a lot of cities in California, car camping, that was shot down here because the neighborhood association, it's all with the NIMBYs, okay? Not in my backyard. If you have everybody saying not in my backyard, like the Pearls saying not in their backyard, the Southeast is saying not in their backyard, everybody's saying not in my backyard, where are they supposed to go? That's the question I came to ask you today, is where can I take the homeless that the police will not harass them, where they can sleep for 8 hours, and where, you know, just basically have a life. We were going to we've brought the plan to set this camp up. I mean, there's going to be computers in there, a computer lab in there. There's going to be telephones and an address, All this stuff you can have at no cost to the city. You can use that $150,000 to build the bathrooms, the community center, the restrooms, everything that you're going to need for that permanent camp that Dignity Village now doesn't really have. And if you use the money that way and we build it green, I can guarantee you I can have 30 people out there every day that'll volunteer and work to build this. So, you know, we're just asking for a chance to do this. And if you want to see my resume, I ran camps up to 25,000 people at the test site in Mercury, Nevada. I spent 12 years down there doing nothing but running camps.
Mr. Barner, thank you very much.
President Fish, just one clarification. I looked into the car camping regulations, and they are still in effect, so people could do the car camping.
Yeah, but they're not allowed to because the church that tried to take him in, the Selwood Neighborhood Association, said no.
Well, there are actually some folks who are doing that right now, and the neighborhood is just fine with it.
Is it? Yep. What I'm saying is you got all these people downtown here every night that are being swept, being harassed, and everything else. If we could just, I mean, those places are big enough to house everybody that's downtown. Okay, and this is only temporary. We can figure out a place to put the permanent camp and then use the labor to build it. I mean, we've put it together. You've seen the plans. You've seen the stuff. I mean, I can't ask it. If it's just me keeping you from doing that, I resign.
Okay. Mr. Barner, thank you very much.
I'll go lay on a beach someplace. I want to do that anyway.
Carla, would you please read Council Item 116?
Request of Sean Aaron Cruz to address council regarding citizen rights regarding private property impound towing.
Mr. Cruz, welcome back.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning. My name is Sean Aaron Cruz, and I'm here again to talk about predatory towing. And as a following up, as you know, I was Senator Abel Gordley's chief of staff for the last 6 years of her very distinguished career, and you're all familiar with her work. And what I want to talk about this morning, I've already provided you with written statement and exhibits, is about what motivated Senator Gordley to take this issue on in the first place. And that she did not see this as a transportation management issue or a Revenue Bureau issue. She saw this as about people, and particularly about vulnerable populations, immigrant populations with low English reading skills, low-income people, people of color, minority populations that are concentrated in apartment complexes, and making no distinction of the ownership of those properties, whether publicly owned or privately owned. And the thing that brings me down here, again, is when I saw the ordinance passed, the council passed December 12, 2012, it was when there was a citizen named Victor Stephen Greenfield, a resident of Peaceful Villa Apartments, who spoke to council at that session. And when I heard him speak, I realized, you know, the situation that he described in several respects was exactly the situation that these laws were enacted to prevent in the first place. And that's what brought me to actually read through the ordinance and find where it varied from state law enacted since January 1, 2008. And here we are a year later, and the city is still not getting there. There's any number of ways. I provide you with a lot of information on where the city is really missing the intent, the legislative intent. One thing that I do want to say to you, the event that Mr. Greenfield spoke about, Peaceful Villa Apartments, publicly owned, where he described his car and five other cars were towed at the same time. He had a decal. It was still towed. Now, the fact that six cars were towed from the apartment complex, that would have caught my attention if I was over at Home Ford. I would want to know why that was. Was there some kind of a raid? But he also had a medical emergency, and the tow truck driver would not allow him to have access to his prescription, which was in the vehicle. He called 911. He started to have a respiratory emergency. The EMTs arrived. And now, of course, we're talking about impact on 911 and police system, all for what is supposed to be something that's taking place between private parties. And And so he spoke to council, and council heard him, and then he left.
If you could wrap up.
I would like to point out...
You have your packet.
Okay, I would like to make one point in Senate Bill 116, which I provided to you, and this is the issue of fair notice. These laws were designed to provide people with fair notice, fair warning, and through a process that should be open, transparent, and accessible to the public, of which it's not. But in Senate Bill 116, it states in Section 3, a tower may not tow a motor vehicle without providing to the owner or operator of the vehicle the information required under Section 4 of this Act. If you read Section 4, it says the tower shall disclose to the owner or operator of the vehicle in a conspicuous written statement of at least 10-point boldface type the prices the tower charges for goods and services. That is a requirement. And if you look down in Section 18...
Sean, I got to ask you to wrap up. We have the packet. You've been communicating with Commissioner Novick's office. There's a couple of points you've raised that they are now responding to. The home forward piece is of interest to me because while we don't directly regulate the housing authority, if they are allowing abusive practices, that's a concern to us because we do fund home forward in other ways. So your time is up, but you've given us information. You've asked for further clarification, and we'll get back to you.
All right. I just wanted to say that failure to provide the notice before towing the vehicle is a violation of the Unfair Trade Practice Act. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. So we're going to take up the consent agenda before we move to time certain. Carla, I understand Mr. Walsh has pulled 122 and Lightning has pulled 124. Any other items?
Right. Your office actually pulled 122 first, so.
You beat Joe to the punch on this. Okay. 122, 124, are there any other items that any member of council or the public would like to pull? Hearing none, let's take a vote on the consent agenda.
Fritz?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye. Consent agenda passes. The two items that have been pulled will be heard as the two last items on our regular agenda. Carla, we have a time certain this morning. Would you please read number 117?
Proclaim February 1 through February 28, 2014, to be Black History Month in Portland.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, President Fish, for giving me the honor of reading this proclamation on behalf of Mayor Hales. Before I begin the proclamation reading, please, would our honored guests come up? Sonny Banjumbo, the chair of the city's African American Network, which is an affinity group under the Diverse Empowered Employees of Portland. So this is a volunteer group that on their own time gets together to discuss issues of common concern. And do you have those of your executive committee
yes,
with you?
I do.
You're welcome to come up. Thank you so much.
Please come forward.
So this morning we recognize Black History Month in the City of Portland, and I'm pleased to read the following proclamation. Whereas much of the City of Portland's honor, strength, and stature can be attributed to the diversity of cultures and traditions that are celebrated by the residents of this great region, and whereas African Americans have played significant roles in the history of Oregon's economic, cultural, spiritual, and political development while working tirelessly to maintain and promote their culture and history, and whereas as a result of their determination, hard work, intelligence, and perseverance, African Americans have made valuable and lasting contributions to Portland and the state of Oregon, achieving exceptional success in all aspects of society, including business, education, politics, science, and the arts. And whereas Black History Month is a time for all Americans to acknowledge the legacies and remember the teachings of those who helped build our nation, took a stance against prejudice and injustice, advanced the cause of civil rights, strengthened families and communities, and paved the path to lives of dignity and prosperity for all minorities. And whereas during Black History Month, all Americans are encouraged to reflect upon the past challenges and successes of African Americans, and look to the present as an opportunity to continue to improve society, advancing the ideals of freedom, equality, and justice. Now, therefore, Charlie Hales, the mayor of the city of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, does hereby proclaim February 1st through the 28th, 2014, to be Black History Month in Portland and encourages all residents to observe this month. Thank you very much for being here. Sunny, would you please tell us about this?
Thank you very much. We appreciate each of you for giving us this opportunity to sit before you. I've been introduced, I'm Megadson Sunny Benjumbo, the director of the City African American Network. And with me is my executive team. To my far left is Cayenne Probasco, who is our assistant director. To my immediate left is Lori Steen, who is our secretary. And to my right is Bill Beamer, who is serving as our treasurer. And we have come together over the last few months and started to put together a list of events that we're going to be putting on throughout the month of February just to engage the city of Portland and our employees here in the Black History Month celebration. We have decided to split the month up into 4 weeks, and in the first week we want to celebrate the legacies of those who have gone before us and contributed to the American history storyline that are of African-American descent. We also want to acknowledge in the second week those contributions. In the third week, we wanted to acknowledge the achievements of those individuals and of the individuals who are currently making strides to help make this city, this state, this region, and this nation a better place. And in the fourth week, we wanted to reconvene ourselves and continue to build the networks necessary to push forward the great work that everybody is working to do. So I want to take this opportunity to introduce our team, to introduce some of the events over Black History Month that we're going to be putting on, and just to really thank you guys for and Mayor Hales for acknowledging this month and what it means not only here in Portland but nationwide. So that being said, don't want to take up too much of your time.
We'd be honored or happy to hear from each of your executive team if they would like to add anything. Okay. About an event or anything you'd like to share with us?
You guys want to talk about each of your weeks?
Okay. And also, if you could tell us where you work.
Okay, my name is Cayenne Probasco, and I work in the Bureau of Human Resources. And my week is the first week, which is Celebrate. Actually, each week is labeled with the initials of CAN, Celebrate, Acknowledge, Achieve, and Network. So that was the emphasis of the 4 weeks of the celebration. So mine was Celebrate. And so to emphasize that point, we really wanted to celebrate who we are as a culture and where we come from. So my week emphasizes that, essentially, like music, famous actors, dancers, that sort of thing, that have given us something to celebrate.
Good morning. My name is Lori Steen. I work in the Bureau of Transportation. I'm working in the Achieve Week. And in the Achieve Week, we celebrate local vendors in our marketplace that we have in the Portland building on the 20th to bring their items that they've produced locally and sell. We also have the Taste of Soul, where we have local vendors come and serve soul food for the afternoon. We also have some videos that are showing during the week for Black History Month as well.
Perfect, sir.
My name is Bill Beamer, and I work with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and I'm leading the Acknowledge Week. And during that week, we're going to have storytelling by Baba Wagwe, who is an African storyteller. That'll be a two-day event, so you're welcome to join us. That will be on the Wednesday the 12th and Thursday the 13th. The first part of his storytelling is going to be more of a history and context of Africa and its culture, and the second day is going to be story. We're also going to have a John Coltrane tribute. We're going to have a band come and play on the 11th, Tuesday 11th of that week.
Hey, fantastic.
And I'll be running the network week, which is going to be our reconvening week. CAN had been on hiatus for some time, and so we brought CAN back. And during our network week, we're going to have our relaunch celebration as well as our first networking event. And that'll take place the last week of the month. So, and we'll be sending out a calendar of events to the citywide distribution list.
And if someone wants to find out about these events online, where would they go?
Actually, we're getting our website up to date through DEEP's website. So we have each of the affinity groups has a hyperlink page through DEEP's website.
And how do you find the DEEP website?
So that'd be portlandoregon.gov /deep/can, I believe. But you can find DEEP underneath the Office of Equity and Human Rights.
Perhaps we could get a link at that website just to make it easier.
Absolutely.
Any other comments from my colleagues? Thank you for putting this on our agenda, coming before us, sharing the news about the program. Would you like to, can we get a photograph?
Right, and present the proclamation.
Thank you.
Let's get a picture with my colleagues. Thank you all very much.